An Operations Subcommittee meeting for October 11, 2022, 4 o'clock. Notification of Open Meetings Act. A copy of the Open Meetings Act revised statute 84-1407 through 84-1414 is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for today's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action. We ask that the public not interrupt the directors' discussion and action. Thank you. Quorum call.
Here.
Yeah.
Here.
Peter.
Here.
Here.
Right here. Item number 4, adoption of agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call.
Yes.
Peter?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Bauer?
Yes.
Sherman? Aye. We have proof of publication of tonight's meeting, which will become part of the permanent record. Item number 6, renewal of USGS maintenance agreement for Papio flood warning system gauges. Ian?
Hey, good afternoon, everyone. The agreement between the NRD and the USGS to support and maintain the flood warning system in the Papio watershed is a longstanding one. It's provided the district, its federal partners, and the community with valuable and quality data for almost 30 years. Many of you are likely familiar with this agreement and with the flood warning system, but as a reminder to anyone who may not be aware, this contract supports 22 gauges, most of which are in the Papillion Creek watershed, and those report a variety of rainfall, stream stage, and stream discharge data. That data is available to the public through the National Weather Service website and the USGS website, and is also utilized by the district and its federal partners for the improvement of forecasting, issuance of flood warnings, and for the operation and monitoring of the various flood control systems in the district. For an idea of the area covered by the gauges, you can refer to the second page of this memo, which has a map of the Papio watershed and the different gauge locations within there. This year, the renewal amount for the contract with the USGS is for the amount of $168,320. Of that, the USGS will cost share $36,680, and the district contribution will be $131,640. For reference, the district contribution in the previous year was $127,595 for gauge operation and maintenance, so it's just a modest 3% increase, which has been the trend for this contract. A full breakdown of the gauge cost and the data provided by each gauge is available on the third page of this memo in Table 1, but if you have any specific questions about the agreement or about the system, I'd be happy to answer them now.
Thank you. We're going to have a motion on this item.
No staff recommendation.
Second.
Is there anyone from the public who wishes to speak to the item? Directors? Director Thompson?
Once again, the USGS has failed to provide cost and pricing data on the $131,000. Is anyone from USGS here?
No.
No. I make a motion to table this until we get proper cost and pricing data on the price of the contract.
Did we do the same thing last year?
We did. We discussed it. We didn't. It wasn't tabled. I wasn't on the committee then.
A question. What specific?
I'm sorry. And there's no discussion when we table. If there's lack of second, then we can open up.
Well, I think it's a lack of second, so you can ask the question.
Okay.
What specific information are you looking for?
How they come up with $131,000, as this was discussed last year.
They listed there's a chart here.
But that's per gauge. Now, their personnel that performs a service, $131,000 worth. When we contract for AE services, for example, we get a breakdown of what the people are going to do. When the government procures, negotiates, I should say, negotiate contracts over a certain dollar amount, they're required by the contractor to provide the elements of the contract so we can judge if it's a fair price or not. This is like a pass-through, just sign it, don't do a damn thing other than and forgive me again, a 3% increase, fine. I can, you know, that's budget stuff. But we don't know what comprises the $131,000 from a government facility. You know, they're a federal government agency. I think we have a right as another government agency to find out what comprises their data and how much they're charging us, who's doing the work, how much per gauge, et cetera, et cetera. This number here, the total per gauge, and the cost share of them versus us, okay, whatever formula we came up with how many years ago, 20 years? I still want to know the breakdown of the cost for the contract, and I don't think that's unreasonable, especially from one government agency to another. That answered your question.
Yeah.
Could we pass this and then ask them to show up Thursday evening?
You're going to have to give them some specific criteria. And I know they've provided data in the past on how they calculate. Some people, it was acceptable, others it was not. I don't know. I mean, quite frankly, we can't do this monitoring without them. So, I mean, we can ask them for all the data we want, and I think they'll provide it. But I guess we have them showing up and asking question, we can give them at least the courtesy of preparing what information we're looking for. So, yeah, I mean, yes, we could invite them to show up.
Director Reagan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering, I see that their flood warning gauges, and very highly important for the metropolitan area of Omaha, but on the other flip side, are they letting us know if the creeks are down, if the water flow is real low, drought monitoring, so to speak, for the surface water?
I don't believe they provide alerts for low water stages, but we can view that information. The district has a login to a site called One Rain, so we can always view the stages. That's reported live. But if you're asking about alerts specifically, and Amanda can add to that as well.
So the weather service site maintains real-time elevation data, even if it's low. So low or high. It's just that the higher levels have flood stages, relate them to creek bank or overtopping, but it continually reads real-time stage data, so even at low levels from April to October.
Oh, yes. Well, okay, that's good to know, because I'm just curious. I mean, like, there's parts of the Platte River in western Nebraska that's just nothing, but bone dry. And I just was wondering what kind of levels of, I should be driving and peeking over and looking myself if there's, water in the Papillion Creek, but are they low? That's what I was wondering about. Thank you.
Director Teaser, I know you made a motion. We had this long discussion about this last year. I think we went ahead and passed it. Is there something you want to amend the motion to say by passing and laying it over?
Well, in listening to the general, I guess I'm definitely in favor of this system. I mean, it's why depend on it, and not to be objectionable to you, Director Thompson, but I'd sooner have it than hold off. So I don't intend to withdraw my input.
Okay. All right. Any other questions from directors? Roll call.
Teaser?
Yes.
Thompson?
No.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Chairman?
Aye. Thank you, Aaron.
Thanks.
Item number 7, groundwater monitoring joint funding agreement with USGS. Amanda Grant.
Good afternoon. Well, this is another funding agreement with USGS, and they provided the same breakdown for this item as well. These are groundwater monitoring wells. There's 6 of them in the Platte and Elkhorn Basin, basically from LaShera to Waterloo, across from the Platte to the Elkhorn, and they did break up the cost attached with the memo is just by site, I believe, with the cost share breakout. So we can talk more about that if we want to. This is another ongoing annual agreement that we have with USGS to do the groundwater monitoring. We use this information. NRDs are required to show surface water, groundwater interaction in our integrated management plan. So we use the information from these readings for our integrated management plan, our basin-wide plan, and our drought contingency plan. So a couple of things about this agreement. Of course, we know the plat sits up much higher than the Elkhorn, and the groundwater migrates over to the Elkhorn. So really, that's not new. These monitoring sites can help us with the timing and the volume of what migrates to the Elkhorn, and that's really important because we're on the cusp, and we'll hear about this in the next agenda item, but of putting together a lower plat groundwater basin model, which has much more detail than anything that's been available to us before, and it allows us, with good inputs, it allows us the ability to make really good decisions for rules, regulations, and projects. So this information is really important. That timing, that volume of how that moves in high and low water is really important to how we make decisions. And especially now in the drought time, I think it's even more important to keep this going. We can always reevaluate it every year, but if this drought continues, we know the plat is so important for municipal water, for Lincoln, and for Omaha. So, you know, I'm not saying there is anything, but, you know, if the need were to arise to figure out how water gets back to the plat, this is really good information for that sort of thing. So with that, this is an annual agreement. The district contribution is $13,720, which is up about $400 from last year. USGS contributes some to that, and the total is $18,090. So again, the district contribution is just over $13,700. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Or if there's any additional information we can bring on the costs. I know we talked last year a lot about overhead and different things like that. If there's anything specific that we want, we can bring someone in or get those numbers for Thursday.
Thank you very much. We can have a motion on this side.
You can do the motion. Staff recommendation.
Give a second.
Second.
Okay. Yeah.
Fred, I was just, so in kind of speaking or thinking outside the box here a little bit, so I think it'd be beneficial if instead of USGS coming to the meeting, board meeting, trying to hash this out. I would personally, I'm going to ask them, if the board agrees, ask them to come and we can have a subcommittee meeting or whatever and just lay out how they calculate their estimates and how they do their accounting and try to maybe educate us how they do it. And we can ask questions. If whoever wants to attend can attend. If you don't, that's fine. But have it more of a one-on-one learning session. That way we're not arguing about it in a public meeting. I don't know if that helps Jim. With his concerns or not, but I think it will allow them to prepare, and then it's more of a free flow of information, not at the public meeting.
So you want to set up another meeting, is what you're saying?
Yeah, or have it set it up for a subcommittee sometime in the...
You pass this motion, then have a meeting.
Okay, and then set up something later.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that way it can educate. I don't know if that's satisfying Jim or not, but...
Okay.
Prepare, and they could lay out their books and business planning.
Okay, well, we can do that. Sure. You don't need
it. If you want to,
sure. Well, people can attend if they choose to and not attend if they don't want to attend. Sure. We got a motion and a second. Any other directors want to comment on it? Yes, Director.
Mr. Chairman, and I guess, I don't know, another dumb question, but sort of with the groundwater monitoring, are we seeing, you know, anything lower than, you know, historically, you know, this, well, maybe 2012, I'm sure there's a new... Big drought then, but is it flirting with those times or anything? Can we?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot going on. In fact, I think we have a report every week and a call every couple weeks with the NRDs and the state around to see just what everyone's noticing and seeing. I think Norfolk has, I mean, this is clearly their lowest precipitation on record from the 1800s. So we were just talking about that this afternoon. There's certainly pocketed areas. And I will say we keep having the conversation. All the NRDs around us actually heard more you know, complaints about wells dry in 12 than we have this year, which is a little bit surprising because I think water levels are lower.
Mm-hmm.
But
wow.
I think it's somewhat more pocketed.
Thank you. Thank you.
Any other questions? My director, Director Thompson.
Yes, thank you. First of all, on the last agenda item and this one, I'm not questioning the need for these services, but I'm also disagreement with the suggestion we have another meeting privately or one-on-one or whatever. But in the interest of transparency, that's all I'm asking for. Dear USGS, give us pricing data for your 100,000, excuse me, this is only 18,000, of how you come up with these numbers. I don't think that's unreasonable. As they did last year, they came up with a GS9 doing some kind of work, and what I don't want to have to do for this board is pay for some administrator in Washington, D.C. to monitor our stream gauges or our groundwater. They don't do anything but present this to us for rubber stamp approval. And whether it's a small increase each year, I think we've been doing this too long on a rubber stamp. Show us what you got and do it at a board meeting or a subcommittee meeting so we don't have to guess what we're getting for our dollar. That's all I'm asking. I'm not asking for judging whether we need this service. We do need it. No one else can do it, apparently. But I don't think we negotiate million-dollar contracts with multiple firms. We always get a pricing structure from them and monitor that according to the progress of the contract for payment purposes. They said in their memo, the results of all work under this agreement will be available for publication by the US Geological. Hopefully that would include who's doing the monitoring and who that person is. Then we can look at what they're getting paid and reimburse them for their time. It's basically a cost basis contract, and I don't think I'm being unreasonable to ask their cost, not just a number out of the air, which is what the previous agenda item and this one. I mean, whether their share is, doesn't matter what their share is. It's a matter they're asking us for X amount of dollars. How do they come up with that? The philosophy of that is, this has always puzzled me. So does that answer your question about a special meeting? I don't want one.
Well, I'm not recommending a special meeting. I think if the board wants a special meeting, it certainly ask for one. And I think that was just a suggestion of John's to have one. If the board doesn't want one, then we won't have one. That's all. That's not part of this motion anyway. The motion was to pass. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Roll call.
Thompson?
Yep.
Fowler?
Yes. Yes.
Chairman.
Item number 8, Lower Platte Collective Groundwater Modeling Interlocal Agreement Amendment.
Okay. So this interlocal agreement for your consideration this evening is a new interlocal that creates what we're calling the collective. It's the Lower Platte group. It would be the Lower Platte South NRD, Lower Platte North NRD, the PAPIO, and the Department of Natural Resources from the state. So the idea of this collective, this is the groundwater model that we were talking about, and I don't know how many years ago. I mean, it was 10-plus years ago the state had put together a groundwater model for us, and it was not very accurate. Everyone felt that it needed more work, and so this is kind of the next step. After all those years, there's new modeling capabilities, and so the NRDs are working together. Upper Elkhorn already has one. Lower Elkhorn, I'm sorry, to put together a groundwater model. So the way the interlocal is structured, it lays out the financial responsibilities, which $188,500 comes from the state Department of Natural Resources. There's a water sustainability fund request in that is anticipated for $282,900. And then each of the NRDs would contribute $62,866 over a three-year period. So that's about almost $21,000 a year for our NRD over a three-year period. And that gets us a baseline groundwater model. So the collective is set up such that the entities that are a part of this group would select the contractor and the consultant and, you know, keep track of that contract and make sure the model met everybody's needs. And the PAPIO would serve as the administrator for this, meaning we would pay the bills and approve those bills as they come on a consensus, a unanimous consensus of the parties of the collective. So if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer it. I believe Lower Platte North approved theirs yesterday. I heard just today, and the rest are within the next week or two.
Thanks, Amanda. We could have a motion on this item.
I got questions before we make a motion.
Okay.
The statement of Water Sustainability Fund grant is anticipated. Should the recommendation of the motion say subject to that approval as well?
The interlocal's worded that way. So if the Water Sustainability Fund, and Brent can maybe talk to this point, but so if we don't get the grant, then we would kind of start over from scratch on how we want to handle.
Okay, I so move the motion.
Okay, we've got a motion to approve. Second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors?
I had a question.
Director.
So whose idea was this originally?
The groundwater model?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the state built one for us, so I kind of imagine it was their original idea.
And they encouraged the NRDs and the DNR and so forth to follow up and continue that, or what?
Well, back when they built the original model, the way it was explained to me that made the most sense was they didn't have very accurate modeling and inputs, so they had to do this really big area in order to get the middle to be accurate, which kind of left the outskirts kind of fuzzy. And so it showed that we were fully appropriated, which means we have to have a lot more restrictions and allocations and things. So people kind of, the NRDs kind of fought back and said, we don't think this is accurate enough to make that determination. So this is where we're at now. It's called ModFlow 6. It's a new groundwater model. It has a lot more capabilities. And so we're at the point where it's kind of taking control for ourselves as the NRDs with the state. Obviously, they're contributing a large amount of money, so they're really behind the effort to get good, accurate data for groundwater models.
So ultimately, who uses the information? Who's going to keep track of it then, and who uses the information?
So each NRD would use it. They could use it themselves. The state could also use it. We could. The possibilities are, you know, crazy. But the idea is that you have a good working model that's accurate, where you could put, you know, even as small as like someone applies for a well, you can put that well in the model, see what impacts it might have to other people close. So little things like that, or big projects, model them and see what the difference might be. But we just have so many years of, we have all the AEM, that flight data. We have so many things to input that we really have the opportunity for a good, accurate model that we can use.
And Ted, I think this idea now, instead of the state dictating to the districts what the fully and over appropriate is they learn that maybe it's best to work with the districts cooperatively. And they'll still use this model to make those determinations, but it's much more accurate, and we have input and say in how that all comes together. Mm-hmm. So it's a much more collaborative approach than they first started by just running the model themselves and saying, oh, by the way, you're over appropriate.
Who at this NRD will monitor the results of these studies, then? Is that you?
So, well, in the interim, yes. But we do have someone new starting that is a groundwater modeling.
I mean, I see that we pay for all these U.S. geological survey things and all this stuff. And I just wondered, do we actually do something with the information that we're gathering? So
yeah, and that's really been a big point of discussion with the Lower Platte South and Lower Platte North, because like we need to be able to use the model. The state has people for sure that can use it, but each person in-house is going to need to learn how to use the model, and there's going to be some training and all of those things so that can be used in-house.
And the person we're getting to fill that position is from DNR that has worked the models.
And they'll be working for the Papio Missouri River?
Yep.
All right. Thank you.
Director Burnett?
Sorry. Both of them have questions, but I did have a question.
Director?
It says in here the collective shall be composed of one representative from each of the parties. Who will our representative be? Will it be you or somebody from the staff?
Yeah, it would be me for now.
Okay, and then that might change later down the road.
Yeah.
And the other thing that kind of stuck out to me real quick was all decisions shall be made by unanimous consensus of the parties. What happens if one party doesn't agree? Is that that language is kind of.
It is kind of, that is at the insistence of DNR. They've operated that way. The coalition, there's a lot of these C words, the Lower Platte Coalition, the consortium, they all operate that way. And DNR really.
So if one party disagrees, then they would just go a different direction kind of thing?
I think that's the idea, yeah.
Director.
Yes, I had a question. Sort of along that line, Amanda, the lines of. Director Davidson, if somebody upstream from us, though, might be over-allocating, would we be able to look at their data from the other NRDs? Do you have that capability?
Yeah, definitely. And that's what the state really wants, is all of these models can now work together and be pieces of one bigger model, and that's how it really will work the best. So, yeah, that's the goal.
Thank you.
And that way, if there's completions, in other basins, we can run that model and see how it impacts
yes.
the water supply in our area.
Yes.
And we're all on the same system model.
Director Burnett?
What circumstances would need to exist in order for an entity like this to own property or purchase property? Why would they have to purchase property?
The collective? The collective wouldn't need to. The only duties of the collective is to choose and administer that groundwater model contract, and it is set to expire. It's a 3-year term for that interlocal, and that group would dissolve after that term if there's no other reason. I mean,
let's talk about purchasing property here.
I can respond to that. So, under statute, anytime you create an interlocal agreement, it has to address how property will be acquired. It's a subsection of the statute. So whether it's real property or personal property, we have to address it even if we know we're not actually going to acquire the property. That's maybe the level. Yeah. It's not something for this.
Did that answer your question?
We'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
5 years from now,
we suddenly have a bunch of land. I'm going to have some questions.
Yeah. No, we won't need
that. Well, any other questions from directors? Roll call.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
Beezer?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Chairman?
All right. I think you're up again, Amanda. 9, amendment to Lower Platte River Consortium Lake Agreement.
Okay, now don't confuse the consortium with the collective, because this is different.
Okay.
So a lot of the same players. This is an amendment to the Lower Platte River Consortium Interlocal Agreement. So this particular agreement has been in place since 2016. It's the Lower Platte South NRD, Lower Platte North NRD, the City of Lincoln Metropolitan Utilities District, and again, the Nebraska Department of Natural Resources, along with us at the PAPIO. So the purpose of the consortium is to look at and study long-term water supplies in the Lower Platte Basin. I mentioned in one of the other items, I mean, the Platte River is heavily used for municipal water, so the idea is everyone work together to study and plan for any drought conditions. So this is a 1-year extension of the interlocal, and there's no budget associated with this. This is just the ability for the group to stay together for really conference calls and messaging. It's a lot of times mostly during drought times used for messaging to get consistent message out for water users, Lincoln and Omaha, and in all the NRDs. The Lower Platte South is the administrator in this case. So, again, no budget, just another year extension to continue to work together on communication, messaging, and things of that nature.
Thank you. We're going to have a motion. A motion. A second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors? Roll call.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Chairman?
All right. Item number 10, fiscal year 2023 long range implementation plan. Eric Williams?
In 5 minutes or less.
Start the clock.
Good afternoon, everyone. The LRIP we do each year. Couple updates. Starting on the cover, we've got the great new logo because this will be around as we move into the rebranded period. Looking forward, there are a couple other changes, cursory changes. The Board of Directors will be updated after Thursday to list Subdistrict 7. We updated the subdistrict map following the 2020 census. That's reflected. And then the district staff updates are also reflected in both the list and the org chart. So those are all included there. That's all kind of non-substantive. The narrative portion is also updated. There aren't any extremely major changes in the description of any of the programs. In summary, generally, we are continuing with most of the programs that we have been implementing in the past. Some things are nearing completion. And so when you look to the easiest way to see the major changes would be in Table 4. It's on page 42. Yes, please. Table 4 on page 42. This is the table that projects the current year expenditures. Maybe back one page, please. The current year expenditures from the FY 2023 budget in the left-hand column. That's taken directly from the budget itself. And then each of the next 4 years' projected expenditures moving to the right. And so a couple things I would highlight here. In the current year, we do expect the remaining funding on the Missouri River Levy Certification. So you can see that's a large expenditure in 23 and then no ongoing expenditures after that. We expect watershed projects to be moving forward in 2023. You can see WP 1, 2, 4, and DS 7, 12, and 19, all listed with expenditures in 2023 and then distributed over the next 4 years. So that's kind of always a pretty significant portion of the funding allocation. And then you can see under the Papio Creek and Tribbs project line item number 3 there, we do have a very large dollar amount. That's reflecting the bond funding from last year. It has done some weird things to different portions of the budget, both in last year's LRIP and then again this year's LRIP. But that funding will be expended into the watershed projects in the future years. So it's a large number. It's just reflected in kind of a strange way based on how this table lays out. We can explain that in a little more detail if you have any questions about that. But that's why there's a very large number in that Papio Creek and Tribbs project category in 2023. Most other programs have similar funding as we've had in the past. One I would highlight is the Urban Drainage Way program. That's line 23, if you scroll down to the bottom of this page. I mentioned this before, and we recently approved interlocal agreements for several different urban drainage way programs or projects. You can see here that we do reflect out the anticipated future cost in the few millions of dollars each year for the next few years, and this is why we anticipate potentially not having a call for projects in that program next year or possibly the year after. So the LRIP helps us understand what future expenditures we will have and make sure that we don't take on too much additional responsibility, financial responsibility, in the next 5-year period. So this is a good use of what this tool is intended to help us do. The watershed projects at the top, the Urban Drainage Way program here, and some other programs, we understand, you know, kind of what we're doing now and what we can or cannot do in the future years. So that's kind of the only specific dollar amount that I wanted to highlight as what this tool helps us to understand. If you do have any questions about any of these specific programs or projects that are ongoing or any of the numbers that are reflected, I'd be glad to answer that. But the recommendation is to approve the document and distribute it according to state statute to the government agencies that we send it to each year.
Thanks, Eric. We can have a motion.
I move staff recommendation.
Second.
Second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors? Director?
Eric, this is just for my knowledge. On number 24, so if you can go out on the next page, like 2023, we have 202 for the flood preparedness, and then the rest is 370, 380, 380. I guess my question is, what happens if we have a really good year? We don't have to do much of this. Does that get carried over to the next year in case we have a bad year?
Yeah.
How does the budget work on that?
So in a lot of these categories, you can see that there's kind of a 24, 5, 6, 7 projection that doesn't match exactly to the current budget. So most of those projections are based on past year's expenditures. So even the next line, the Conservation Assistance Program shows 611 and then 750. So we make a general order of magnitude estimate based on past expenditures. I think that's what is reflected in the flood preparedness and ice jam removal.
So we're covered in case we really have a bad year.
And there aren't specific expenditures identified until we get into the budget process each year, but this kind of gives us a general order of magnitude of what we expect to be occurring in the future, so that if we know something 2, 3, 4 years in the future is going to be a very, very large expenditure, we can begin to prepare and kind of pare back our expectations in other areas. But so for that particular line item, we think it's usually on the order of $200,000, $300,000. If something occurs that triggers a significant flood response, that's different. We aren't able to project that in the LRIP, but we make those changes in the current year budget when that something like that occurs.
So what happens if we get lucky and we don't have to use very much ice jam removal at all? What happens to that money? Or does that just go back into the general fund and we could use it for other projects? Or?
Yeah, so the ice jam is like, $150,000. Okay. So whatever we spend, and we do have an annual retainer, so there's always something every year, even if we don't have any explosives-type work or lights. So we just recoup from the partners to get us back to that $150,000, and we maintain. Every year we plan to spend the full $150,000, but we...
Hope not to. Yeah. Okay. Okay, thanks.
Any other questions from directors? Director Jett?
I have just one question on... Actually, page 45, cash on hand, $51 million. It reflects the bonding have?
Can you say again where we're looking at here?
On page 45, it says cash on hand for 2023 is $51 million. Is that?
Yeah. Yes, that does reflect the bond funding having a strange influence in the way things are reflected here. It showed us $18 million expenditure there, but the cash on hand number is a specific line item in the budget. So... Carrie could maybe provide a little additional clarification, but that is essentially the cash amount at the end of 22 went into as a revenue, listed as a revenue source into 23, and appears basically at the top of the chart here. So we do not anticipate as significant of a bond funding cash on hand or carryover amount in future years. That's why it's $51 million and then falls down to a much more reasonable amount that we usually see in the carryover.
How much bonding authority do you have left, you know?
I'll defer to someone.
Five-year deal, wasn't it?
Well, so it's tied to 1% of your, or 1 cent of your valuation, total valuation.
Yeah.
That you have available, and I don't, it changes every year, so I don't know.
We can find it on Thursday.
On Thursday,
yeah.
Of course. Oh, okay.
Okay.
Okay. Do you have another question? Any other questions? Greg?
Item 39. I have a little bit concern that in talking at local weeding and Wahoo with some of the weed guys that. The way the vegetation is growing on the river this year because of the drought, if we continue in a drought, we're probably going to have to be doing some spraying other than Phragmites, and that could take us over that dollar amount.
We can address that in the budget.
Yeah.
And so if we need to increase that, we'll work with that. I think we contribute $30,000 a year.
We contribute $30,000 a year. Right.
Yeah, so we, and if we have to get the partner, we'll make that request. Everybody.
Yeah, I'm cool with that.
So one additional point I would highlight, Director Jaff, from your comment. In the chart, there is a table. There is an item for, at the very bottom, it's after number 60, it says letter A, bond payment. And this is not, so on page 44, maybe 43 for you. There is a dollar amount there for the annual bond payment, and that is estimated to be the same in the future, but this is a higher amount from the past. I think the number last year was $4.7 million, and now it's $6.3 million. So this is what's reflected as once we take out those bonds, we have an ongoing payment to pay for them. So essentially we are spreading out that expenditure over many years into the future. But you can't see the fact that last year's bond payment number was lower, but that is a few million dollars higher now because we have taken out, as the table indicates, $30 million. Yeah. So it does translate from large expenditure at the top, which goes into the watershed projects, and then we pay it down over time, and that's reflected in the bond payment, which will extend out past the end of the table.
That makes sense. Thank you.
Yep.
One thing to note, too, and we kind of learned this when we looked at that LRIP, but so because of our bonding authority and the our success in getting outside grants, either Water Sustainability Fund or FEMA funds, so we were able to trim about 8 years off the projected timeline of completing the priority reservoirs. So it was projected in 2019 to finish in 2040. I think now we can finish in 2030. So that's quite a bit. That's almost a decade we've shaved off getting those projects built, and then obviously not only the benefits, but just the beating the increase in cost year after year of delay. So that's when we went to the legislature to get the authority. But we said, hey, we want to shrink the time frame. And to actually see it occur with not only bonding but also the success of our staff getting outside funding sources, we're seeing that, in fact, that is the reality that we predicted.
And from what's on the screen right now, you can see, again, 1, 2, 4, 7, 12, 19. That table does extend out farther than 2027. The LRIP only captures the current year and the next four, but Amanda has a table that reflects the expenditures on the watershed projects even beyond 2027. So we are aware of where that funding is as well.
Any other questions from directors? Director,
so which category would you include funds for armoring the creek, the interior creek riprap?
In existing locations, so the kind of the top of the chart reflects project maintenance channels and levees. So line number one, and that's kind of for work on the major branches of the Papio system. That number kind of fluctuates. It's a little higher this year. I think there are some repair projects that we are anticipating. So the future year projection is based on past year's expenditures, but the item number one, channels and levees number this year is higher than it has been in the past, but we don't anticipate it at that level into the future, but that's the project number.
Roll call.
Teaser?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
All right. That completes program projects.
The time is 4:42. We'll call the FEL subcommittee to order. Notification of the Open Meeting Act is posted in the back of the room. Quorum call.
Bradley? Here. Conley?
Here.
Davidson?
Here. McCormick? Here.
And
Sherman? Here. Adoption agenda.
Second.
Roll call.
Conley?
Aye.
Davidson?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
And Sherman?
Yes. Item 5, proof of publication and meeting notice. I have it before me. Moving on, item 6, issuance of water system revenue bond, Dakota County Rural Water. Justin Novak.
Good evening, directors. I come before you tonight to just request the issuance of our water system revenue bond for the Cramper Lake Extension project I've been working on since I started this position, and I feel like the end is in sight here pretty soon. So, we are at the point now where we're in final design. We have all the land rights acquired. We are just finishing up some final details and paperwork for the USDA, and one of the requests is the issuance of this revenue bond. They said it didn't have to be done until the project was completed and constructed, but I thought it would be kind of backwards to ask for funding once we've already built the project. So I wanted to come in front of you and get this approved tonight. We were discussing bonds here a little bit ago. This actually doesn't come out of our bonding authority through the state of Nebraska. This is actually issued by the USDA through the Rural Utility Services Program. So once the project is complete, we will basically start the 40 years from making the payment at that point. We're anticipating about 2 years from now from that project completion, and hopefully be out awarding a bid this January is kind of the plan. So the one good thing about this loan that we have in place is we've already secured the interest rate. Here a few months ago, we were able to get that locked in at 2.625%. The only thing that could possibly change is if there was a lower rate to come in, but I don't really foresee that here in the next couple of years, so that would actually be a good thing. So we're still approving the not-to-exceed amount. So we're going to be getting a $1,954,000 through the bond itself. $1,762,000 will be through a grant in the USDA Rural Development Program. So that's a substantial amount of money for this project that will be paid for by the feds. And then $200,000 of that project will be contributed by Dakota County Rural Water, which we have expended those dollars already just in design and engineering costs. And so the total estimated project is just a little over $3.9 million, and we're hoping to get this thing off the ground here pretty soon. So I'm asking for your approval on getting the bonds issued through the USDA tonight. Thank you.
Second.
Anybody from general public? Do we have anybody from general public here? Okay.
Justin, you're pretty confident we can get it done for 3.9 in today's environment?
I'm feeling better. I think kind of with where the construction is going and where I kind of see things going in this economy right now, I'm feeling like we can probably get this done. I think we're hoping that contractors are going to be a little bit hungrier. If we get this advertised in November and we plan on a spring construction and you know, a two-year time frame, that kind of secures work for these contractors for quite a long time. Obviously, material costs haven't come down, and I don't really foresee that happening in the near future. Obviously, if we weren't able to get favorable bids for this project, we wouldn't move forward. But I think we will, you know, and I really do believe that with this type of project, it's very specialized. So we're going to do regional advertisement, Minnesota, South Dakota, Iowa, Nebraska. I mean, we're trying to reach as far as we can. So, but I do feel that we'll come in. I think this is a reasonable number. So, yeah, we went back and forth on this quite a bit. And honestly, this project has increased since I've started in the last year and a half. It's gone up about $700,000 in cost estimate for the same
project. Who was our engineer for this?
Olson. Okay. Matthew Smith out of South Sioux City is the lead engineer.
Okay, last question. How many customers will this add to our?
Currently, we have we're planning right now. We've got 30 initial signups. Obviously, the end game is getting the water out to Cramper Lake itself. That was really kind of what spurred this whole project. Is we've had a lot of complaints from the constituents in that area about the water quality and how poor it is. But we also know that once you build a rural water system, it's kind of like the field of dreams. Once you build it, they come. You know, and so that's what will happen too. We know some people that are looking to develop some of the tracts of land around the lake itself, so that'll probably bring in another 20, 30 customers we're anticipating, but they can't subdivide that ground until the rural water's in place because the county isn't going to approve smaller tracts of land until the water's in place. So, we have the potential to add over 100 new customers just with the. And this is only on the western part of the system. Dakota County is really expansive. I'll call it the flat ground that runs off the water tower. Then we have the hill ground that runs off the booster pump station. And that's what this is. This is the hill ground. So we're putting in a new booster pump, which is over 40 years old. We're putting in all new, updated, fully integrated booster pumps that you can be, you know, you manage remotely. We're going to have a new standpipe with three times the capacity for a water going from 25,000 to 75,000 gallon. Plus, we're putting in 18 new miles of water main. So we're going to have new customers, new infrastructure, and really kind of put this system into an operational place where hopefully I won't have to worry about it until I retire. So,
thank you.
Yep.
Any further questions?
Sure.
I'm sorry, Kim.
So in the previous, we talked this mm-hmm. number of customers is a break-even point that mm-hmm. pays for itself. That, mm-hmm. I believe that was the intent.
Yeah, I mean, any time, obviously, you're trying to do upgrades and things like that, you don't want to change your water rates by 20-30% overnight. So with what the NRD has helped with and what we're anticipating new customers, current customers, we're at about 700 customers on this rural water system right now. So we're adding another 30 to 50 we anticipate right away, and we'll pick up more as we go along. So, you know, our annual water sales are about $350,000, so if you add another, we'll just say 10% in customers, you're talking another $35,000 in revenue just right there on an average. But obviously, it just these are things that have to be done, you know, as far as the booster pump and the standpipe and things that are just – they're over 40 years old. So, you know, we're trying to offset that by expanding our territory as well and serving an area that does have really poor groundwater and quantity too. So, but, yeah,
it doesn't appear to – cash flow?
This is all based on revenue. So, yeah, we'll have enough cash flow generated to pay this to pay these bonds back, yes. Because the rural water systems operate independently, so no tax dollars are actually used in the water system in itself. So it operates on revenue and expenditure from its own water sales. But, yeah, so I don't foresee, you know, unless water rates go up high from Dakota County, you know, if they come back and say, hey, we got to drill a bunch of new wells, we're going to up your rates from $1 to $1.50, obviously I have to relay those costs. But with what we're doing with the pioneering fee at the NRD and bringing the water out to Cramper Lake with the additional water sales that we're anticipating from this, we feel that we won't have to raise water rates, at least in the near term.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any further questions? Seeing none, roll call.
Davidson?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
And Sherman?
Yes. Hey, Justin, after the meeting, could you run out some water? Everyone gets their water running out?
I would love to help them, but unfortunately, we can't control water main breaks. Oh, okay. We had the same issue in Tecama here last week, too. And, that's every water system's nightmare. When you lose water service to over 25% of your customers, you go into an automatic boil order no matter what. And then you have to basically take two bacterial tests to come out of that boil order. So, it's always a nightmare that you live with when you're in the rural water business.
Indeed. Thank you.
Yep, thank you.
Item number 7, no name dike, high ground easement, purchase lot number 44, last of it. Do we need to go to the deck?
Not for
item
7.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Good afternoon. The first item is about the Jared and Brittany Lasavica property. We have a signed purchase agreement from this couple. It is for the appraised number of $1,700. This is an unapproved lot, so it's a lot that has no house on it, and they've agreed to the appraised number. So we're proposing to the board that you approve that motion, which would approve the general manager to sign the purchase agreement for this easement. So I'd be happy to answer any questions. We have a map, of course, that shows where this is at, but you've probably seen it enough times that you don't need to see it again. But any questions I can help you with?
We get a motion?
So move.
Okay. Anybody from the general public wish to make comments? Director? Roll call.
McCormick?
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
Conley? Davidson?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Yes.
Thank you. Item number 8, I'd like to have a motion to go into executive session.
So move.
Second.
And this is to discuss the high ground easement at Sokol Camp. Roll call.
Bradley?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
Davidson?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Yes.
Yeah.
Continues to pursue this.
I make a motion we move out of executive session.
Second.
Second.
Roll call. I'm sorry.
Conley?
Aye.
Davidson?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
And
Jefferson? Yes. Now, can we get a motion to...
We move with staff recommendation.
There is no.
Any discussion from general public? Don't see any. Directors?
I'd recommend to be specific on the motion because there's nothing on paper unless it's in the memo there. I don't think it is. Is it?
What do you got?
This is the recommendation.
Okay. Management recommends the subcommittee recommend to the board the authorized district legal counsel to initiate the filing of a petition in the county court of Douglas County, Nebraska, on behalf of the district pursuant to procedures governing eminent domain provided by Nebraska Revised Statute 76-701 and others for the appointment of appraisers to ascertain and determine the damages that will be sustained by the following landowners: Lot 39, Christian Otwell; Lot 40, Christian Otwell; Lot 45, Philip Cahoy, Bernice Cahoy, joint tenants; Lot 54, Kenneth Boycourt, Gene Boycourt, trustees for the Inter Vivos Trust, dated on the 7th of April, 2004, Sokol Camp Edition, Douglas County, Nebraska, for the district's acquisition of the necessary land rights for No Name Dyke, and I so move.
I second.
Any further discussion? Roll call.
Davidson?
Yes.
McCormick?
No.
Bradley?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
And Sherman?
Yes. And I believe that concludes our agenda.